You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I want to wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all. So why don't you smile?
If it's Thursday, that means we're doing Lynch and Kenny. And joining me from Texas is Tim Lynch. Timmy, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing just fine, Mac. Thanks for having me on again.
You betcha. And joining me, he's I think in 29 Palms, Jeff Kenny. Been working his ass off all week. What's going on, man?
Oh, bottle care, Mac. And help you guys.
How was everything in 29 Palms? It was cold up there last week. It was freezing when I was in Las Vegas, man. Is it warmed up any?
It was cold the first couple of days, but it's warm today. So windy too, which is a real misery.
But you get to sleep in a hard shelter, so you got it all right.
Yeah, I've been here a lot, so no problem.
Yeah, no kidding. What first year you were in 29 Palms was?
75-76.
75-76. Timmy?
It would have been 90-94.
I was there in 85. We bracket it every 10 years. One of us shows up for the first time. That's nice. all right. You guys were both on earlier this week. On Monday, we were talking about events that happened in Nangarhar Province. And between the time Jeff and I recorded something, additional information came out that said that this thing happened at an LZ as they were preparing to egress. And Jeff, we didn't know that when we went on. When we recorded what we recorded, is there any other thoughts that you had as more information has come out of that?
Well, I think that, you know, the report that came out is probably accurate. This guy's probably providing security on a vehicle mounted 12-7, and he got pissed off. And the problem with these guys, these Askars, these soldiers, is they don't have what we would consider a normal sense of the consequences of acts. You know what I mean? So it's like when they do this shit, they don't really take into consideration that their life's over. You know what I mean? Because you see it again and again. So this guy just engaged that 12-7 and just, fired up. It's amazing that some of the guys who are still alive are. I mean, one guy has a head wound, I think the senior enlisted in the team.
Right.
12-7, that's incredible he's alive.
Yeah, just hoping that's a graze or something like that. I mean, because you're not going to survive an into-your-head 12.7 gunshot wound.
You remember Earl Ebert, man, he got hit in the chest with a 12-7. Right. But gone through a dude or something first. It's what he told us, because he said it was a profound thing. And that Charles Beckwith, the first Delta Force guy, was hit through the stomach and exited out his back 12-7 when he's in a helicopter. So, it didn't survive, but man, it's an awful wound, Yeah. When a 50 cal hits a small person, it just blows into pieces,
Right. No, I mean, what is some – it's 50 caliber and then how many millimeter?
It's 12.7 millimeter. It is a 50 cal, but it's way less effective than a Mod Deuce. I mean, they don't do timing and headspace on a 12.7, but its range is way less than a 50 cal. But I mean, at that range, it's the same thing, probably.
I just know that it is, of all the weapons we ever shot, the 12.7 gave me the worst headache I've ever had in my life coming off a range. I mean, it's a loud, violent sound. I mean, the Mod Deuce, I don't want to say you could listen to it all day, but I don't know why the 12.7, man. One of the worst headaches I ever had was coming off range 7 in Quantico when we shot that son of a bitch all day, and God, I thought my head was going to explode. Timmy, how about...
It's better than Mod Deuce because John Browning was a hell of a man who jumped out with a dick in his head.
Genius,
man.
Timmy, how about you? Any additional thoughts on any other information that's come out since then? Not, I haven't seen a whole lot new that's come out.
No, I haven't either. But two things of interest. The first is about those guys. They come off of Jalalabad Airfield is where their base is, and they've got a separate a camp inside of there. It's their own chow hall, their own range, their own everything. Right, right, right. They're not part of the training and support effort. They're a counterterrorism effort. And for the last 4 years, they've been focused exclusively on ISIS and Achin. So that is one thing of interest. I don't know what they were doing with the key leaders thing, but they've been door kicking for 4 or 5 years now, and they've lost more people. Nangarhar was the number one province for American casualties 3 years in a row. That's number one. Number two is the day we were talking, the Washington Post came out with an article that said what we were talking about 3 months ago, which is ISIS has been defeated and they're gone. And nowhere in that article did they mention the 2015 Taliban offensive, nor that the Taliban were the ones that drove them out this time either. It to me, it was the most bizarre thing, because I don't believe the reporters could not have known. It's been reported extensively throughout the international media that that was the case.
Okay,
so that was the only interesting.
I have a question, Timmy, for you. Connected, you know, Nangarhar to ISIS to our casualties there. What is
correct?
Why is ISIS somehow or other attracted to Nangarhar province? Simply because of strategic value? Is there any other reason
No.
that they would be that they'd be so, you know, enamored with Nangarhar province?
The ISIS-K came through, their fighters were the TTP. They were a Pakistani Taliban who were getting crushed by the Pakistani army in the Khyber Offensive 1 in 2014. And they flowed into that valley asking the locals for shelter. And they stayed there for a couple years, and they weren't bothering anybody. They weren't bothering the AMP. They weren't bothering the Taliban. Everything was good. And they suddenly started to radicalize, turning first on the Taliban, because the Afghan government was more than happy to have them, because they were Pakistan's problem. They were going across the border and tickling Pakistan army and attacking them. Then they attacked the Taliban first, the Afghan army second, and they grew into a gigantic force because they were able to attract a lot of youth because they're pure jihadis. That's how they marketed themselves. But their allegiance to ISIS caliphate, I think, is tenuous. I think it was a flag of convenience for them, and they're gone now, or at least they've gone to ground.
Got it. Jeff, any other thoughts?
Achin has always been has had a tradition of having factions, like pro government faction, or at least pro, you know, anti Taliban slash anti you know, especially Pakistani Taliban influence. So Achin was like in 2009. I don't know if you remember this, Timmy. They're a big player in elections because
they were,
and so there it really was. You know, a point of contention. Achin has always been, it's like a place where it gives you the impression good can be done, because there's actual, it's not one way or the other. You know, Achin's not totally bad, totally good, but it's a dangerous place because of the, you know, it's like kind of like Beirut, I guess, in a small way.
Got it.
There on the border with Pakistan.
All right. The also in the news is evidently we have some kind of initial agreement. There's not too many details about it, but the Secretary of State spoke with President Ghani of Afghanistan, who tweeted that there might be an initial agreement that the violence will be de-escalated as a precursor for other movements. Did you all see that? And what are your thoughts, Timmy?
Yeah, I did see that. The problem is with the Taliban normally is you don't have, you know, you've got factions in there, you've got various shooters controlling various units. But last Eid, they declared a unilateral ceasefire, and the Taliban fighters flooded into the cities, not Kabul, but Jalalabad for sure, all the other cities with their weapons, and everybody was rejoicing, and there seemed to be some momentum for them to lay down their arms. So what the reason I point that out is that despite the improbability, they've done it before, and they may well be able to get everybody to calm down, at least to get us the hell out the way.
But your admonition is be careful, because this is not a monolithic organization. This is a hydra, essentially, and it doesn't always go the same direction.
It most definitely does not.
Got it. Jeff, your thoughts?
I agree 100% on them not being monolithic, because every peace thing that's ever been worked out on a large scale level has always gone to shit because somebody isn't following the program. On the Taliban side, and now with ISIS in the mix, it's even more that way. Right. So all these things got to be done, locally, I think, and that's very difficult. I have to tell you something else. You know, the only government that really lasted for a long time that they had there was a monarchy. And the reason was, the king was like my dad. You know, he'd tell my younger brothers and stuff, he'd say, "You guys, when we're gone, do everything Jeffrey says. And Jeffrey, don't tell them to do anything." Pretty much. That's what the king did with all these tribal guys and stuff. They'd have a loyal jirga, and he basically said, he didn't tax them too much. And that's why Afghanistan stayed kind of a backward country. But it was a country from the time the Brits left in the 20s up until they overthrew the king and put in, the socialist type government, which eventually went communist, which eventually caused the Russians to come in because people hated it. And so same thing there. It's like these guys, they really like not being told what to do, and especially not being taxed.
I want you to explain something, because when we talk about Afghanistan, one of the things that we see is that it's essentially warlords running city states. Yes.
Yeah, I believe
that. Okay, so when the king is in charge, how is this thing unified? How is this thing held together? It's held together because we're all Pashtuns and we run it and we have this relationship. Does the king exact tribute from all the provinces? Can you explain that?
He didn't extract hardly anything from the provinces. And that's why he lasted so long. Right. And he was so popular, because he didn't require that much of them. And consequently, in those days, like when in the 70s, and Afghanistan was a shithole, Kabul, they're way, way more modern than they ever were before the Russians came in. And because of all the nation building that happened, both under the Soviet Union and then under us, and with the space in between, when they went back to the Middle Ages, basically during the 90s, between the end of Najibullah and the Taliban taking over, the city of Kabul was destroyed by warlords fighting each other. And a lot of them ended up being on the same side. They had gone back and forth, against each other multiple times. The Uzbek Dostum against.
Got it. So what does the monarchy add? And it sounds like we have a border, a national border, but we don't have federal police. We don't have we don't have the federales, and the king's up there, acting ceremonially. But he doesn't impact the way we do business out here, and that's how we do it?
Well, if you read the book Little America, they talk about during the 60s, the big irrigation projects. They basically took ancient irrigation systems and refurbished them so they would work down there in Helmand Province
and
stuff.
Right, right.
Ever since the end of the Second World War, people are always trying to help the Afghans. The Afghans are like, hey, yeah, have at it. Just don't try and keep us from, our independence. But eventually,
hey,
go ahead, Timmy. I know you got something.
I just wanted to add this one thing because it's killing me. Do you know why the king isn't back in Kabul now? Because he was alive. I mean, he was there in Italy. And the reason he's not in charge now is because of Zalmay, our envoy, our presidential envoy, him and Karzai. They're the ones that put the loyal jirga wanted the king back. And we killed that. We did.
Okay, so I guess here's my question again. What does the king add to, or is the answer to all that is, the king doesn't add anything. Afghanistan's never been a one nation. It's always been these city states that govern themselves, and the king's good with it, and he plays his role. Where does the king get his money then?
Well, the king, he doesn't get much, but he does get it from some of the business ventures they have going, but it's not intrusive as far as
Does he run Cobble, or does somebody else run Cobble?
No, he runs. He ran Cobble as
okay.
far as I.
So there you go. Yeah. All right.
Yeah, but it was. I mean, I'm not saying the guy was good. He just has the absence of. Wasn't intrusive.
Right, and no, that's one of the points I thought that was interesting that Timmy made on Monday was that hey, look, when you look at Nangarhar and you look at the wood that comes out of Nangarhar. And the fact that these bridges have been blown and nobody's rebuilt these bridges. And now we have another layer of government, this federal layer of government, and now they want their money too. So you're clipping us and you're not helping us, right? Fuck, I don't need that, right? And you wonder where these, you know, how this strife, well, where does it come from? Well, let me tell you, I learned a long time ago when I started studying economic history, right? If you don't believe clashes, the first cause is money, then you're stupid. Because if we can get along with money, we can probably sort everything else out. And so to me, that stuff makes a lot of sense. Let me shift gears. I want to go to Syria. Syria and Turkey are dancing the dance of the iguana right now in northern Syria, as Syria with, you know, Russian help has pushed towards the border. Any thoughts on that? And we're off on the eastern side of that. Any thoughts on that little dance?
Well, incidentally, we took some fire. I mean, we had some of our guys engaged in like a little dust up, or I think maybe one Syrian was killed yesterday or today.
Yeah, no, they got stopped and held up in a city, and we all know you're sitting there and you're like, and then somebody jumped up on one of the vehicles and is ripping down the American flag. At some point, boys, we got to go because, you know, sitting here is not good for anybody's lifespan. And so the guy got whacked trying to rip a flag off an after he climbed onto an American vehicle. And the story I read was he was trying to rip it off and they engaged him and killed him. But they were held up at a checkpoint. And so to me, I mean, that's no bueno. But I'm not so interested in that. I'm more interested in your thoughts on the Syria-Turkey thing.
Well, it's like you said. I mean, because I never heard you say a smarter thing. Nothing's like
sure you have.
You know, nothing's a coincidence. You know what I mean? That's why I brought it up. But because I believe that. You know, and I think we had some tenseness with the Russian guys that were in there too here in the last couple of weeks. You know, our troops that are in there, and we the conventional guys we have getting there now, I think, are basically security for firm bases where our soft guys are.
Right.
You know, and so consequently, you know, I think, you know, they're starting to push us a little bit.
Right, which is how the Russians do it. But I want to go back to Syria, Turkey. Any thoughts on that? Turkey has said we're not leaving.
I see what you're saying. I think the Syria-Turkey thing is maybe Turkey is cozying up to Iran. Well, maybe not cozying up to him, but at least saying we can coexist. We can split the difference here, you know?
Interesting. Interesting. Timmy, any thoughts on it?
Well, when they first went across the border, I believe you could go back and look. I said, let them cross and come across the border and establish a little security zone and then wait and see what happens because they're going to get into a tar pit. We know about this because we've jumped into so many goddamn tar pits. It's ridiculous. And I said back then, that's going to be a problem for Russia because Russia, of course, they're both clients of Russia. Russia needs Turkey because they need to get out of the Black Sea. And I just think this is wonderful. Let them have all the friction in the world. I love seeing friction when it's not involving the United States.
Yeah. The other thing that, you know, one of the reasons Turkey pushed into there is to attempt to control the refugees. I've seen numbers as high as 700,000 people have been displaced by, you know, the gentle hand of the Russians and the Syrians as they move through Idlib province. And so kind of interesting as they close on each other, and Turkey reiterated again today, hey, we're not going anywhere. And if they get near us and they don't behave themselves, then we will have a shooting event. So it's kind of interesting. And I'm with Timmy. Yeah, like get after it. Let's go, boys.
Yeah.
it's not any fun trying to go into another country and get everybody to calm down. Even when your intentions are benign, it doesn't matter. Right. It's just you're gonna catch some shit and they're gonna catch it.
Right.
You're working bars and it doesn't work in countries.
And you know what? And you know, Turkey's gonna get its comeuppance, right? It's you want to play all ends against the middle? Well, we'll see what happens. So that's interesting. What about The Commandant supposedly sent his plan to change the Marine Corps, to modify the Marine Corps, to adjust the Marine Corps, to transform the Marine Corps, whatever the hell he's doing, to the Secretary of Defense. Based on the things you've seen, any thoughts on that plan, Jeff?
Well, you know, I've been stuck out here since last Friday, right. And but I see these, like, we're working with 2-5 right now, and they're going through. It's like I haven't really seen, you know, too much evidence of a change. Really, we're still doing the same stuff. One thing that that has changed is they're paying less attention, it seems like, to theater security cooperation stuff. So, in other words, I mean, helping out like people who are like in the areas around there, you know, or they're switching out the way they do it, and in doing that, it's causing a drop off in support. So, some of our partners over there, like Jordan and I think probably Iraq, are seeing like a lowering of the quality of U.S. forces coming in to advise them and so forth. Not the quality because they're not good guys, but because they're switching and there's not been a good passage of corporate knowledge, which will get fixed pretty quick. But I'm just noticing that, you know, I think that that's a issue. Matter of fact, that's why we're out here now working with 2-5, is to try and get them up to snuff to go do a mission that was being done by a lot more senior people before. You know, it's nothing secret. You know, it's nothing that's not open source, but it's.
What about you? Do you have any thoughts on the whole morphing of the Marine Corps? You know, the things I've heard is all the tanks going away, much of tubed artillery going away, tailored for the South China Sea, smaller battalions. Have you heard, you know, have you had any conversations about that, Jeff? Any thoughts on that?
I mean, no one's really talking about it. It's like it hasn't manifested itself in anything real yet. You know what I mean? Like, I'm out here choking on tank dust all day today, you know? Right. And, you know, nothing's been manifested yet. You know what I mean?
Well, you should treasure those moments because they're evidently going away.
I love that big fucking M1A1 tanks, you know, and guys, you know, there's a AAVs conked out on the side of the road and guys working fast, getting them back up to snuff. Yeah, it's like, you know, and then the tubed artillery thing. My instinct is it's better to have tubed artillery and not need it than to need it and not have it, you know. And I don't know. You wonder who has the ear of the high ranking people. You know what I mean? Because some things you can really depend on. Bad weather, shitty ceilings. You can shove a 155 round in, and if your declination and your distance is good, you'll hit the fucking target and you'll save some lives, you know, some U.S. Marine lives. Where if the fucking if the air guys can't fly, you know.
Good. Right. Timmy, any thoughts on anything you've either read or seen as the Commandant's plan goes to the Secretary of Defense?
I am alarmed. I'm very uncomfortable with the whole concept. And I listened to your interview. Was it Colonel Cancun or Cancun?
Mark Cancun.
Cancun. I listened to Colonel Cancun. And what he said was exactly right about our reserves being, you could move your artillery and tanks into reserve and they would be pretty capable of responding very rapidly. That sounds like adult thinking, but I'm not hearing that from what I heard from the Commandant. And the only thing I've heard was what you've played on the show. And we, and this includes the Commandant, we came of age at a time when the Marine Corps had recovered from the problems post-Vietnam, rebranded itself as America's Force in Readiness, went and demonstrated that capability to great effect in Grenada and Panama and other a host of other stuff. And I always believed in the concept of the nation's force in readiness. We've got the complete package. We go. We're self-sustaining. I think moving away from that is a mistake. And I don't see how any Marine of my generation wouldn't feel the same way. I don't know what the Commandant knows or what he's thinking, but bouncing around and staying someplace for 48 hours and bouncing someplace else, that sounds like a SEAL mission or something. That doesn't sound like a – how the hell are you going to do that with a battalion? I just don't have any idea what he's thinking, and I'm most uncomfortable with the thought of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting. And again, there's not that much out there. He made some comments. And again, along with, you know, what Colonel Kansian said, you know, even if you look at the Pacific, the fight for Korea, vastly different than, you know, the fight in the South China Sea.
Yeah.
You know, so I get, you know, tailoring 3 MEF, but 1 MEF, 2 MEF,
mm-mm.
You know, we're all going to be local security for rocket forces. Right. And so we can set up FARPs and control choke points. Right. So, I mean, I'm curious to see it, you know, and as many people are. And I believe that, Colonel Kansian, you know, his headline, not so fast, Marine Corps. I mean, I think that. And then, you know, the other point he made was that the Marine Corps is the only service that has like a mirror image division in its reserve. Everybody else has their heavy bridging assets, their, you know, their MPs and the things that they need in peacetime and low density. But in wartime, you need them in greater, you know, density, like generator mechanics. I remember meeting a generator mechanic. I'm like, what the fuck do you do? He's like, sir, I'm a generator. Oh, shit. Then you deploy. It's like those guys are like gold. You know?
Yeah, they are.
Hey, find me a generator mechanic. Yeah, sir. We haven't seen that guy in 3 days, man. All he does is work, you know. And that's kind of interesting. What about the – I sent you guys a story about the Israeli has a – now is working on a drone dome. And
it's like a drone version of the Iron Dome.
Yeah,
they're branding. Their branding is excellent.
we talked about, well, how do you defend against these drone swarms? Well, the Israelis like, yeah, you just laze the shit out of them and knock them out of the sky. It's like hearing mosquitoes getting whacked by your purple light.
Like you said, it's too easy of an answer. You know, but I have to tell you, if you remember, I don't know if you guys. But the whole Ronald Reagan, space, you know, whatever the fuck SDI meant, but basically Star Wars that he put out there, it made the Russians basically spend themselves under the table trying to deal with the fact the United States might be able to shoot down ballistic missiles. And, I mean, what we got out of it was the Patriot missile system. But, I mean, it did a good job helping the Russians go belly up, in 89. So it's like are the Israelis? I don't think they're trying to do that, obviously, because they're dealing with non-state actors. I mean,
right. But awesome. What they are saying is that if you're not willing to invest in some kind of secure, either guidance system or some kind of secure communication system, which is going to heavy up the equipment and going to make it more expensive, if you're not willing to do that, then your drone ain't getting through because we'll just zap it out of the sky.
You should just. Yeah, they're trying to discourage them from even trying.
Right.
And that's the thing that leaked out of me, and it leaked out of you too, Mac. It's like, it's like too easy. So they're going to have to test it.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the Russian thing is that, last week the Navy announced that it was putting, I want to say, low-yield nuclear warheads on attack submarines or something like that. And who screamed immediately? The Russians.
Yeah.
Why? Because they've got an economy the size of Canada, right?
Yeah.
Which means, we can do that too on all three of our submarines, right? And they just can't do it in numbers, as Jeff said, which is what Reagan did to them. It's like, do you really want these treaties to go away? You know, Dr. Evil doing his Dr. Evil impersonation, which, by the way, he's absolutely fantastic at. The problem, I mean, he plays, you know, the bluff like nobody's business, right? He rolls around acting like, you know, he's got it, but he doesn't have it. And so it's very interesting to watch how they behave when you see these discussions about, you know, about treaties and things like that. Russia needs those treaties. So it doesn't have to spend money that they don't have. And where they get into trouble is they start spending that hard currency shit trying to compete, and then the country gets away from them. So I think that's kind of interesting stuff. But, the other thing it reminds me of, Jeff, is the whole we used to do this thing at IOC called Men Against Tanks. And if you ever sat through the class, one of the things that they went through in the class was the spiral of, you know, the tank shows up at Cambrai in World War One. And then the way you defeat the tank is you get a bigger, Bofors gun or some shit like that. You know, you bring the elephant gun out. Well, now they put a little bit thicker armor on it, and then now you got to have a bigger engine, right? And then what do we do? Well, now we're going to shoot a cannon against it. And so it goes through the evolution of armor, right? Shaped armor, applique armor, right? Yep. And then the way weapons change. Tank kills another tank, right? And then it was kinetic weapons and all the rest of that stuff. Now top down, TOTU Bravo shoots through the top, down from the top, and all that kind of stuff. So it kind of reminded me around of that. And the solution in terms of getting a laser, you know, finding it, zap, find it, the next one, zap. So it showed on the video, it showed like a swarm attack, right, of like, I don't know how many, five or six. And the laser was like this. Eep, boop, eep, boop. Next, can I go back to sleep? Yeah, put it on standby. Well done there, Ichabod.
Remember Bob Muse?
Sure.
Bob was like, he was so into the IOC thing. He loved it so much that he became a lawyer and left the Marine Corps. No, but he was. We used to call him Arab Bob because he had that Boston accent. But Bob said these motherfuckers just going to go no tech on us because there's going to be no way they can, like a race like you just described, Mac, that they can do it.
Right.
Gonna do like these motherfuckers did in Fallujah and Ramadi and out there in the Korangal and places like that, you know, down there in Helmand. They're gonna go low tech. They're gonna go we're gonna be in here among the people, and the only way you're gonna know who we are is when we try and kill you. And yet we still need to maintain that superiority in order to have that.
Right.
You know, have that, you know, that a dominance, you know. So it's like, it's just, it's a conundrum. It's a never-ending conundrum. That thing you described with the truth is, that first tank that, you know, that they came across with, it didn't even go 3 miles an hour. You know what I mean? And it got bogged down in the mud. And
right.
Sucked, you know what I mean? It was just, you know, it was awful, you know.
But it scared the shit out of everybody, right?
Piss out of everybody. Yeah,
it rolled through the holes. I mean, while it went, it rolled through the holes. It rolled through the concertina, which people couldn't get through. The machine guns are just bouncing off. Bing, 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 bing. It's like 900 degrees inside, the son of a bitch. But at the end of it, they went, whoa.
Men against tank things, because we all learned a little bit of German. Like, I knew how to say, from my time on embassy duty, ah, bazooka visum, Ende der Halle links, schalte sieben, bevor sie rangen, Handtasche aufmachen bitte, which means, oh, visitor's visa, end of the hall, take a left, window number 7. Before you go, open your handbag, please.
That's impressive.
Our men against tanks thing, Panzer Angst, and Panzer Schreck. Remember that? Panzer Schreck, yep, was terror, like you just described with tanks. Panzer Angst was the sign. You hear that? There's like a rumbling in the distance, you know? They might be coming.
No, and, that was a tank. What was the other noise? Oh, that was Lynch just shitting his pants. Why?
Because that was one of our own AAVs.
Because it's his turn to earn the tank destroyer badge. Right. Here you go, Timmy. Good luck.
And we're the only ones who knew like, the movie Saving Private Ryan. There's a part where this guy runs a new anti-tank rocket, you know, besides the old Panzerfaust thing. And one of these guys yells, Panzer Schreck. And I know every IOC instructor who hear that thinks that was inaccurate.
Yeah, that's bullshit, man.
Phenomenon, not a weapon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, Dale Dye could kiss my ass. He screwed that one up.
Yeah, Dale Dye. He's like he's James Webb's, you know, most unfavorite Marine for sure.
That's always been the spiral of armament and technology, right? It's we went through it in Iraq where, you know, we got, you know, they were using cell phones to set off IEDs, so we got jammers. that went out 25 meters. And the whole convoy, you know, the jammer would be on the first and the third vehicle. The spacing between the vehicles would have to be, you know, XYZ. And all of a sudden, the last vehicle get, you know, 25 meters, you know, past. And then, kaboosh, it would go up. Well, they figured it out. So what did they do? They remoted the cell phone 50 meters away, ran a wire from the cell phone to the ID, and then they start going off. So what do? We get a morph out. We get the you know, Mach 2 version of the upgrade, and now it's more powerful. And so it goes. So men against tanks, man. Men against tanks. Who'd we lose? We lost Jeff. Did you teach Men Against Tank to me?
No, I think Jeff did.
Oh.
I did not.
Are you back? Are you back, Jeff? He is not. So I just thought the drone video was moderately interesting. Given all the talk of, like, how do we defeat these, you know, these swarms of drones that are going to come, and now they're going to be equipped with ordnance. And then you see the Israelis say, yeah, we got an answer for that one. What is it? It's a laser with a radar dish that shoots them out of the sky at, like, the cyclic rate. Oh, got it. Current events, but I've been kind of musing about this. Does the country need stars and stripes anymore because of the way we get our news these days? I mean, there was a day when there was a picture of a Marine or a soldier or a sailor or an airman sitting around the world reading Stars and Stripes. You don't see that very often anymore, Timmy. Do we, Stars and Stripes, is that a bygone product of another day?
Yeah, I think it has to be. And it was such a tremendous service when you were deployed in the 80s and 90s that getting the Stars and Stripes was a big deal because all you had was snail mail. But that's not the case now. And I mean, who reads a paper anymore? I know I don't.
Well, and then when you can get online, is the first thing that you think of, like, let me go to Stars and Stripes and find out what's going on in the DOD? No.
Oh, no. No, of course not. No. Uh-uh.
Yeah.
No, I think their time may be past. Maybe while they're at it, they can defund NPR, too. That'd be awesome.
So the DOD budget proposal cuts all funding to Stars and Stripes. So, no, and it's, again, maybe it exists and somebody funds it privately. But I don't, I think it might have, outlived its usefulness. There was a day and age that it was necessary, but that day and age are probably long past.
I don't recall seeing, you know, I would go on to the FOBs relatively often, and I don't recall ever seeing the Stars and Stripes lying around anywhere. Military times, yeah, but not Stars and Stripes. Now that I think about it, and it was ubiquitous when we were deployed in the 80s and 90s. Everywhere you went,
there'd be a stack of them with the mail.
Sure, exactly.
Yeah, not so much anymore. I don't know. And again, Tim and I come from an era when you grab a copy of Stars and Stripes, you look at the sports scores, you look at the whatever. I mean, you'd read it cover to cover simply because you didn't have any access to news. And
and
you'd pass it around. Hey, who has the paper now? Oh, Lynch does. Hey, when you're done with it, well, I'm giving it to Kenny. Hey, Kenny, when you're done with it, can I have it? Yeah, you can have it. But I'm gonna have it for a while, so don't get froggy on me. I mean, it's a historical thing, and
it is,
and kind of a sad day. Anything? What around the world, Timmy, has your attention these days? That you read about?
Well, I don't know whether to be alarmed about the coronavirus thing or not. I don't think this is the global pandemic that some people say it is, but I do think if there ever is a global pandemic, it's going to start in a similar fashion. You know, that's what they got, 60 million people quarantined in China. Can you imagine that? My God. And the reason it has my attention is, regardless whether this turns into a super a predator of a disease, China is going to be brought to its knees economically if this I don't know how they can sustain themselves, this kind of a massive effort that is shutting down their supply lines and people are bailing the hell out of the country. This is a tremendous challenge to China, potentially a threat to people outside of China, but I cannot be worried about it, because you can go on YouTube and find guys that will, you can find any way you want to read this story. It's either a threat or not a threat. It's benign or it's the end of the world. You can find stuff in the press that will validate that view. So it's very difficult to determine what to believe, you know?
Right. That's all part of, I think, capitalizing on the uncertainty, which is to just publish content on it and drive traffic. So whether it's true or not is really secondary.
It's 14 days. It's a 24-day incubation period. We're all going to die. I mean, it's just nutty to me. That's the one thing I've been paying attention
but
to.
But I'll tell you what, it is absolutely right all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it seems to be virulent.
You don't lack for content if you're going and looking for it. That's for sure.
Well, my understanding is that you drive north of your town up there and you can't find a face mask from the coast of Northern California clear into Utah, that they've all been bought up by people mailing them to China. I don't know that that's true, but that's one of those things.
I thought they produced them all in China and we were at risk because they were going to cut off our supply.
I have no idea.
And then I read that the mask. And then I read that the mask doesn't do anything.
Yeah, I've read that too. It gets in through your eyes, and so it's, you know, you were all screwed. I don't know, but I do know that it's very difficult to take what you read seriously, you know, and we'll have to see how this works out. But what China's doing, I believe, is unprecedented in human history. Trying to lock down that many million people, that would be very difficult to do that in America. But and this is where the Second Amendment would screw us. Because I think if you took the steps you needed to take to isolate a highly contagious disease, you're going to meet resistance, armed resistance. And that's the only downside of the Second Amendment, in my humble opinion. It's very difficult to quarantine large groups of people.
Yeah, it's been interesting. Well, first of all, they caught a ton of flack, right, because they didn't react to it right away. You know, you have the doctor that was a whistleblower. He's dead now. And so, mm-hmm. No, it's just, and again, how much of what you read coming from China can you actually believe, and where does the truth lie? So it's been, whatever information gets out, it's not for lack of reporting and volume, because it's all you see, you know. And, you know, the more I watch the news and stuff like that, the less I ever want to go on a cruise.
Oh, no kidding, man. No kidding.
Why? Why would you want to do that? I'm thinking that you're not ever going to see old Mac on a cruise, because those people, man, they look like they just get the worst deal. I mean, you have people fall off. You have people get sick. You have people disappear. Like, I'm not sure what it is about a cruise. Is it like really cheap or something like that? Is it like a great deal? I've never been. Have you ever been on one?
I have been on one. I've been on two, as a matter of fact. The first one was actually a high school, Quantico High School senior class trip to Bermuda. That was intensely fun. Yeah. We were down in steerage. Yeah, it was cool. We had a great time. All like 33 of us.
That would sound like a great time. What about the next one? Where was that?
The next one was from San Diego down the coast to Mexico and back. It was like 2010. I was contracting and was a little flushed then, so I paid for nice cabins. What I failed to do was bring books or the frigging cord to my Kindle, and my God, I was upset because I could. There's nothing to do. The you can work out in the gyms and that's okay. You can go swimming, but the reason you go on a cruise is because it's buffet lines and booze, and booze is cheap. They got to pay, but it's very little, and that's the attraction. We're gonna hit the buffet line and drink booze, and holy shit, man, that's not an attraction to me. I didn't like it. The ports of call were interesting. But it's not something I would do again. It's not without a shit ton of the books, because my God, I was I was so upset I didn't have access to anything to read.
Yeah. The I look at those poor son of a bitches and I'm like, not that much. Does not look like a good time. I have been to me it's kind of interesting to watch the economic impact of it, you know, as suppliers, right, who have factories there, right, they're not able to do business, factories aren't able to produce, and yada, 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 as the Chinese try to deal with it. So I think that's to me pretty interesting at a time when China's economy, because of their standoff with the United States, is in not so great condition. So it'll be interesting to see how the Chinese, how the Chinese navigate this. Time to see if Jeff has rejoined the program. So,
hey,
hello.
Oh, I'm here.
There he is.
What's your deal? How can if you're in the hotel room? How can your internet go south like that?
I don't know. I'm on the fucking internet and everything. It's like it says all of a sudden it just said your power's weak. I got it plugged in and all. You know, so I don't know. I'm just fucked somehow sometimes.
we were talking about the economic impact of the coronavirus. Pretty interesting to watch China try to navigate this at a time when their economy was already scuffling because of their economic tete-a-tete with the United States. Any thoughts on that there, Rain Man?
Yes, there are thoughts. One of them is glee, not glee at their misfortune with the coronavirus, but seeing them try and tap dance their way through this thing and failing miserably, whereas before they were like a monolith, you know. China either let you know information or they didn't. And now all of a sudden, because of, modern economy and stuff like that, we know that they're like trying to hide whatever's going on and doing a shitty job of it. They can't hide it because they're too interconnected. And so we're finding out they're trying to, they're arresting people who say, hey, this guy got sick or I'm sick. So they arrest a guy who says he's sick on the internet. And put him in instead of putting him in the hospital, they put him in prison, and he dies. And they're acting like we can just keep this quiet, like we did the whole cultural revolution. Oh no, not anymore.
It is. But they still like you didn't see President Xi for like 2 weeks. When you're the head of a nation, aren't you just supposed to come out and like even fake some photo ops? Right, you can fly to Taiwan and say, "Hey, could I borrow an airstrip for a couple of days and roll around and take some pictures and say you're out seeing people?" But you're not supposed to be like in the bunker for God's sakes. And President Xi was like nowhere to be seen, and you could just hear him thinking, "Yeah, fuck that, I ain't going out there. Those mangy knaves. Last thing I'm going to do is have them screw up my deal. Screw that."
He's in the nearest Boeing 737 with the guy with the air mask down, like they tell you in the briefs before you go, sucking on the air out of that thing. So you're sick.
I found a little humorous. There's not too much humorous in the coronavirus, but I found President Xi's approach a little bit interesting because he just said, "Yeah, I'm out. Fuck this." Like you guys aren't allowing me to plunder this country enough for me to go out in that coronavirus shit. Oh, we're not? I thought we were.
Before I get cut off again, let me ask you guys something. You know, I'm doing this thing for the Marines that are going to go be working with the Jordanians.
Yeah.
And we had a lieutenant colonel, a reserve lieutenant colonel who was out there in this task force like two rotations ago doing advising and training, their QRF that they have there that, operates out of Aqaba and stuff. And so his attention gainer is this video. And it's a transition drill between M4s and some other automatic rifle that this guy had. And this is an older guy, like about our age. you know, who still looks like he's in pretty good shape, and he's got his glasses on, he's got his body armor, and him and this younger guy are going back and forth, and they're doing a good job. And I'm like, so what? I'm thinking. Turns out that's King Abdullah. You know, he's King Abdullah of Jordan. Then the guy, this guy, Lieutenant Colonel Sun, gets up and he's talking to the Marines. He says, and this guy, and he says to the Marines, do you remember when ISIS captured a Jordanian pilot and put him in a cage and burned him alive?
Yeah.
And about half the Marines did remember. I mean, I certainly remembered it.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, the Jordanians did a strike on the, on ISIS positions after that. And this fucking guy led the strike.
The King of Jordan?
King did it.
In a plane, right?
Yeah. Fucking, he did it in a high performance, like a F-4 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, he looks like, with his sunglasses on, he looked like the guy, the mailman in Cheers, kind of like, you know what I mean? But he was shooting his ass off, you know what I mean? You know, the guy's go, hey, Nami, the guy kind of like, what was his name in Cheers? You know, the guy sat next to the big fat dude.
Cliff.
But Cliff, right. Yeah. Guys from Bridgeport, Connecticut, you know that guy. He looked kind of like him, but you didn't really see him because of his sunglasses. And I've seen the guy, and I heard him speak. He talks like Laurence Olivier. He's got that British accent.
Right,
matter of fact,
right.
He had a
and he's got what's his wife's name? Queen Noor.
Yeah,
I don't know if that was.
Oh yeah,
I think that was. But he does have a wife she's Palestinian, so I think we're thinking back, you know, to Prince Hussein.
Queen Noor of Jordan. I'm looking at a picture of her.
So, yeah, that must be his wife. Yeah, hello?
Wait. Noor al-Hussein is the Queen Dowager. I don't even know what that means, of Jordan.
That means mom. She's still alive. It's not his mom. It's his stepmom. Because King Hussein had two wives. His first wife died, and that was King Abdullah's mom. And when Hussein died, Abdullah became king. But I was just impressed with this guy, you know?
Wait a minute.
And he's got a hottie stepmom. That's that's amazing.
Yeah, Queen Noor, she's like, yeah, you know, you don't, Jordan pretty much plays it on the down low. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's been an armored officer. He's been a jet pilot and attack helo pilot and a special forces guy for them before his dad passed away and he became king. And he says, I'm an army man, but I love U.S. Marines. He's like the biggest Marine proponent, you know, in that part of the world.
Well, you know, and he's, you know, he's a pretty enlightened monarch in the region, right? I would say when you see him, first of all, he's the most Western, right? But when you hear him talk and you hear him articulate his vision for the Middle East, you're like, yeah, that guy. Why doesn't he have all the oil? Then he could be our guy.
He's got potash, is what he has.
I know.
That's right.
Jordan, and he sits in the middle of like a, you know, the triangle of death, right? He sits in the middle of that shit show. But I mean, you see him and you're like, who is that guy? And whoa, yeah. where did she come from? Cause and he's about, no, but he looks like he's from like, he could be from like the Bronx.
France.
Yeah. He could be from anywhere. But mm-hmm. I did not realize he led the strike though. That's impressive.
Lieutenant Colonel Derek Sun, reserve guy who went through IOC. Like, this is how old we fucking are now. He's a lieutenant colonel who already had battalion command in the reserve. He had like 124, and he went through IOC in 2006. I'm like, God damn, I'm old, man. And you're fucking about to be a colonel. He got selected colonel. So, you know, but he had that mission. He talks to the Marines about it. But then he said that, half of Jordan is not Jordanian. They got all these other people live there, and they're not allowed to vote or serve in the armed forces. So that's a kind of an issue for them. You know what I mean? They got a half, like this guy fucking Zarqawi was from Jordan. He's from Zarqa. And Zarqawi's not his real name, of course. It's like, you know, Abdul Boulderdash or whatever. But yeah,
Larry Smith.
Because he's from Zarqa, you know?
The they're saying that maybe the king did not take part in that airstrike. And I'm just reading a BBC article, but they showed some pictures and they said, yeah, that's an old picture. So whether he did or not, I mean, I'm a huge fan of the guy because he says all the right things about, you know, we've got to learn to coexist with Israel. I think that thing has been, you know, I think that thing is downrange. I think we have a chance to I'll talk about the greater Middle East prosperity sphere, blah, 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 blah. We got to take care of the Palestinians because what happens is Jordan gets destabilized by all the Palestinian refugees that come into Jordan, and then they've got to deal with that shit. So it is kind of.
That's the whole, you're absolutely right, Mac. I mean, the whole thing, Black September, the guys who did the massacre, those Black September doesn't come from what the Israelis did to the PLO. It comes from what the Jordanians did in September of 1970. They shit canned all those refugees you're talking about into Lebanon because they were threatening the stability of the country. Right. And that's where Black September comes from. The Black September isn't from an Israeli ass whipping; it's from a Jordanian one.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And who pulled those Palestinians out of Lebanon?
Us.
Yeah, that's the same crew. Remember, there were a lot of Palestinians. As a matter of fact, I think we dumped them on Kuwait. But when Saddam invaded, the Palestinians sided with him. So when the Kuwaitis retook the country, they booted them all out too. Palestinians are not popular people.
They got to start making better choices.
Yeah,
right.
They were Tunis. Remember that the Israelis did a bombing raid on Tunis, like in the mm-hmm, in the.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, I've got a question that somebody sent me earlier in the week. They said, Mac, I'd be curious if you guys could entertain this. If each one of you could meet one person in history, who would it be? With the caveat that they have to be dead.
You got to be dead, right?
They got to be dead. What dead person in history would you like to meet other than Jesus of Nazareth? Just we'll take him off the table.
I'd be afraid to meet him.
Yeah, for good reason. For good reason. For good reason too.
Embarrassed.
Who, Jeff? Who would you like to meet?
Now, there's so many. I'd say I'm going to put it into American terms. I'd say I want to meet Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt. Why?
Because I think he was responsible for making sure the United States became a world power. Could have gone either way. The guy who was his main rival, I mean, and then the main rival really up to the 20s was William Jennings Bryan, who was the type of let's get back to the farm type. Matter of fact, the guy who wrote The Wizard of Oz, Frank Baum, was a William Jennings Bryan aficionado, and he believed in that too.
Right.
For America to become its true, back to its true constitutional roots, we need to become more agrarian like Jefferson and fucking Washington and shit. And that's the whole point behind Wizard of Oz. There's no place like home. Go back to the farm. Be a dildo. You know? Yep. We gotta get involved. We gotta shoot elephants. We gotta have boxing matches. We gotta learn how to speak 20 languages. That's how it goes. You know, so.
All right, we'll come back. We'll come back to you about one person from outside the country, Timmy. One dead American that you would like to meet.
Quanah Parker.
Whoa.
Quanah Parker was the greatest chief of excuse me. Quanah Parker was the greatest Comanche war chief. The first time the Americans ran into Quanah Parker, he was only a teenager. The Comanches he was with, they're not at war. They put on a demonstration. Then Quanah Parker rode in front of these guys because they were all clapping, amazed at their horsemanship, stopped at the last man in the line, shot him in the face and laughed and ran out. That's the first time we recorded history. 20 years later, Quanah Parker gets taken in because they've run the Indians to ground by a bad hand, Frank McKenzie of Civil War fame, who likes him. And he basically allows him to live in Leavenworth next to the Commandant's house. And he sends him out to bring in other recalcitrant Indians. And Quanah Parker's mother was a little girl who was kidnapped in the very first raids during the wars. And the Parkers had become a very big and wealthy clan. And Quanah Parker sued him, saying that he deserved some of the land and inheritance because he's a Parker too. It's hysterical. He rode in Theodore Roosevelt's inaugural parade. Theodore Roosevelt was a frequent guest at his house where he had peyote ceremonies legally. He's the only one that could, and eight wives. And went to D.C. repeatedly, died a very wealthy man, although he gave it to the tribe from cattle ranching. But he had white guys manage all the Indians' land. They just paid him. The remarkable, remarkable, remarkable guy.
Mine is not going to – mine's, you know, more obvious. I'd like to, like, hang out with Lincoln for, like, a few days.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's no doubt about I hear that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, just like, hey, let's talk about saving the Union now. You said a lot of different things, right? You've got these shithead generals. Like, what do you do? How do you do this? Ah, fuck, I don't fucking know. These guys got to get out their dead ass, and somebody got to kick Bob Lee's ass so I can give me some fucking breathing room, man. I'd be, you know, and then just thoughts about, you know, Reconstruction and binding the nation again and all of that. So I mean, that's kind of low, ripe, hanging fruit. But I think it'd be just so interesting to sit with, you know, somebody like that and pick their brain who had such, you know, a huge impact on the country and arguably the nation's greatest president.
Like, you know, George Washington, Andrew Jackson, Abraham Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, and, keep them from coming to blows with some of them, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but okay. No, just be able to sit there and have a discussion, you know, and the same thing with, I mean, you could do the same thing with Madison, Jefferson, and who was the finance guy? Who was the finance guy?
Mellon?
Not Mellon, God. I can't remember.
Rush, no.
All right, let's talk about somebody from outside the country. Somebody from outside.
Hancock.
Yeah, right.
No, it's not Hancock.
Damn.
Somebody from outside the country. Jeff, famous dead person you'd like to meet from outside the country.
Yeah, Julius Caesar.
Oh. Well, I don't know. I don't think that needs an explanation. Timmy?
Yeah.
I was going to say Winston Churchill, but I don't know what the hell I would say to him. I'd be much more interested to talk to Erwin Rommel because Churchill would just lecture me. I mean, there's no way I could interact with him, you know?
As long as you hung out and smoked and drank with him, though, you'd be good to go.
But, maybe, yeah. But I think I could sit down and talk to Rommel and gain some insight out of it and not sound like an idiot. You know what I mean?
You know, I want to say that I would love to talk to Viktor Frankl, I've gotten so interested in just the American prisoner of war experience in Vietnam. When I was cleaning last Saturday and I was listening to the book Return with Honor, written by Lee Ellis, an Air Force pilot, you know, and he talks about, you know. He talks about all that they went through. And to me, you know, relative to post-traumatic winning, it's so germane. And I think the American POW experience, you know, has great lessons for all of us relative to struggling with, you know, things that we find that are overwhelming. And if those guys could do it in the conditions they did it in with no mental health professionals, with no doctors, you know, we could probably take a lot of lessons from them. And it would certainly go a long way to helping, you know, use real tangible examples of real people who went through real difficult shit. It was really interesting to hear Lee Ellis say that, you know, they read, right, as I told you, they read, you know, Man's Search for Meaning while they were in the Hanoi Hilton the last couple months. They were there. And then you hear Lee Ellis said, yeah, you know, we didn't go through anything close to what Frankl went through. And you're just like, holy shit, man. You're hearing him say that. So, no.
You know, the hard part about that is the thing that makes me admire him the most, both them and people like Viktor Frankl, is you're in this situation. It's as horrific as it can be. And the worst part of it is you don't know how long it's going to last. is it forever? Is this, I'm going to die here? And so to keep your spirit up and your hope up.
Well, that's the Stockdale quote about the true test of character isn't, you know, to persevere when there's light at the end of the tunnel. The true test of character when there's no light at the end of the tunnel and there's no hope of light coming at the end of the tunnel. You're like, oh fuck, that's darker than I was thinking. I was thinking there'd be maybe a glimmer of hope, and what he says, no. All right, one person that's living that you would like to meet, and we'll end this thing.
Oh, it's not my turn, is it?
Yes, it is. It's your fucking turn.
Who's living it? Who'd I like to meet right now?
Yes. Yeah.
God damn it, this is hard.
Timmy?
Yeah, you go, Tim.
Timmy's always got a quick answer.
I would like to meet Steve Bannon.
Not because I'm a political guy.
But I sat and watched an hour and a half of the full interview he did for PBS on the 2016 election, and his way of articulating our history from the last 100 years was so impressive that I was listening to him talk, and I mean the guy is brilliant, and I'm like, wow, because he combines the history with the culture with the social trends. And I find him to be endlessly fascinating, not because of how he's portrayed in the media, based solely on that 1.5 hour long interview. And he took it from the top and talked the whole way, no notes. And it was like one of the better lectures I've ever seen ever. I would like to meet him.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. I thought of a guy, and I agree with Tim, by the way, but I thought of a guy, Bob Dole. Before he goes, before he dies.
I don't know, wait a minute, dude. You're too late.
He's dead.
No, he's not.
Really?
Timmy?
Hold on, I'm checking.
He died.
I'm pretty sure he's dead.
They had his funeral. He laid in the rotunda.
No, that was McCain. He was at McCain's funeral. I don't think so.
Okay, whoa.
You're right. He's alive.
He is right. Yeah, look at that. Goddamn Rayman. Rayman is like that. Jeez.
Oops, sorry about that.
My wife and I have these annoying conversations, you know. And
I could have sworn he would pass.
I don't think he is dead. I go, oh, for sure he's dead. Jesus. And she proved to me that he wasn't.
No, he's 96 years old.
He was alive still. So. Although he could have gone yesterday, for all I know.
No, we would know about that.
Sure, we would.
You know? Yeah. No, you're right. That's what I remember. I remember him at McCain's funeral. Well, now, you know who I'd like to meet? And I hear her all the time when I do post-traumatic winning is Elizabeth Smart. Young girl, at the age of 14, you know, raped every day for 9 months. And, everybody, you know, talks. I'm sure if she heard us talk about like her strength and stuff like that, she would look at us and roll our eyes and say, like, if you only knew. And that's what, to me, I find as the longer I do post-traumatic winning, the guys that are still living, that are, you know, Hanno Hilton veterans. I think, and I'm trying to get my shit together to approach one of them to say, I believe you have a message that could save a lot of people in this country. Would you be interested in joining it? Because look, I use you guys as the quintessential example of what it is to transform somebody else, and each of you give your suffering meaning, and that's why Frankel resonated with you all so deeply, because you had lived the experience, right? You had lived the experience. And, might you be interested in being a part of this? And so because I do, I think when you could take a real world experience at the end, and I do this at the end, I use Stockdale's, you know, the Stockdale paradox is you have to be willing to confront the truth. And I say, look, we have gone down a road that starts with, I'm going to fake it. And the next step is, you know, a mile down the road is I'm not going to talk about it, because that's not what men do. And then there's an offshoot that says, if you use alcohol, enter here. and either we try to put it in the closet forever, or we'll use alcohol and we'll self-medicate. And that's how we get through that. And those are the superhighways of how we've dealt with trauma historically as a culture in the Marine Corps, and I think as a larger culture. And the trailhead of post-traumatic winning is the Stockdale paradox. Will you confront the unvarnished truth? And if you will, then you can go down this path, and this path is a path to live a great life. And to me, they are the ambassadors of it. They, the guys from the Hanoi Hilton in Vietnam, and they lived it. They did it for each other, and then they came home and wrote a history that is virtually unparalleled in terms of group achievement after. You know, torture, solitary. You know, John McCain at one point says, well, you know, I was only in solitary confinement for 3 years.
Right? Imagine that. 3 years. Good God.
I was only in solitary. You know, Alvarez was in longer. Stockdale was in longer, you know. And, you know, they say these things. And you're just like, holy shit, man.
Yeah. Anyway. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right, boys. First of all, I appreciate the visit tonight and wish you all the best. Jeff, behave yourself up in the desert. When do you get to come back down to the coast?
Coming home Saturday night. Got inshallah.
All right. Well, travel safe. Timmy, all the best. Have a good day.
Thanks, brother. Dad. Same to you.
All right. There you have it. Jeff Kenny, Tim Lynch, more of All Marine Radio coming up next right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.